Good evening, anarchists everywhere. Welcome to tonight's Anarchism in the UK with me, Ian Bone. First, a couple of public service announcements. Tomorrow at 8 a.m. in the morning, outside Gate 1 at the Cowley plant in Oxford, the 850 sack workers at Cowley will be staging a mass picket, which is, of course, illegal. So if you're anywhere near Oxford, get down there to give them a hand. Make Cowley the new Saltley Gates. On Tuesday, the Government of the Dead, motto, the only good government is a dead government, will be holding a zombie voodoo walk down Oxford Street, leaving from Oxford Circus at 6 p.m. prompt. We're promised a zombie parade, a New Orleans-style jazz band, pancake races down Oxford Street, and a stringing up of a few bankers at the gallows at Tyburn Tree. The government communique reads thus: the zombie voodoo walk is the spirit of Mardi Gras, is set for Shrove Tuesday, historically a time of disorder and tumult in London. Fresh blood, open wounds, eyeballs wanted. Zombies lurch to the gallows at Tyburn Tree, under escort of Keystone Cops, Samba bands and Dixie bands. There'll be time for a spot of window shopping en route. And finally, on Wednesday at 12 o'clock, there's an autonomous block on the student fees march at 12 o'clock, gathering under the autonomous black and red flags. Meet the corner of Thornley Street and Russell Square at 12 o'clock. Okay, that's the public service announcements. Now to welcome tonight's guest, Rick Nugent. Welcome, Rick.
Good evening.
Let's get straight in there, Rick. You were a Vietnam draft dodger, but you were English. Now, how did that come about?
1964, I was 13 years old. I was a barrow boy in Chapel Street Market and living in, sort of going to school down at King's Cross in a sadistic school in Victorian, all the blackboard being chucked at you and clipped your ear and cane and everything.
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, they were the days. I miss them, miss them. But I mean...
Oh, so it was a fee-paying school.
Of course it was, yes. Now, Mum and Dad were sort of working their bollocks off. I mean, Dad was job shopping, Mum was doing rag trade, so she was... I could hear the machine working 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And they still didn't have enough to make ends meet. So they decided to emigrate, basically, and they went off to Canada. So one minute I was a barrow boy down Chapel Street Market, next thing I was looking over at Niagara Falls, you know. And, you know, it was a bit bizarre, really. But then they didn't stop there. They couldn't make any money in Canada, so they moved into the States. They got green carded, which meant they was allowed to work. So we all got green cards.
The whole family was allowed to work.
The whole family got green cards, you know, basically. So we went down to Georgia. So we lived just outside Atlanta in a place called Marietta. So we stayed there for a while, job shopping. Dad was in the aircraft industry. He was a toolmaker. And then from there, it was over to Texas in a place called Grand Prairie. And the school was called the, what are they called? The Gophers. That was it. Gophers. That was between Dallas and Houston. Then after that, they moved to California. So we lived just outside Los Angeles. So it was in 69, I became 18, and I was eligible for the draft.
Even though you're English and you hadn't taken American citizenship.
Because I've green carded.
Yeah.
There was a friend I knew, someone I knew who was a German geezer, and he'd been drafted. He was older than me. And they shipped his body back in a coffin to Germany. They never even shipped it back to America. God. They actually sent it, so the parents had to go over to Germany to bury him. You know, they didn't even ship it back to America. I mean, so that was the situation. So
what happened? You got a letter through the post saying you're being called up and you fell off your stool?
You get drafted. I got my draft card through, basically, because it was a lottery at that time. And there was a lot of Americans didn't have to go.
So how did the lottery work?
It worked on your date of birth.
Right.
So basically, they picked my date of birth out of a hat. Oh, that meant I was eligible.
You got lucky with the lottery.
I got well lucky for a change.
have you tried it again since?
Yeah. I don't seem to be so lucky these days.
So what did your mum and dad think about you being called?
Didn't want that. They didn't want that. But, I mean, you usually get a bit of time. So, I mean, you get drafted, and it's usually about a year later you get called in to get your health check and check on that. So, you know, I thought I might want to have to get back and see my mum and dad sometime. So I thought if I leave around now, so I got some work going, you know, so I got some jobs going to make some money. And then once I made some money, I hitchhiked across from California to Florida with a Jack Kerouac thing about I was going to work my boat.
How long did that say?
That's a... About a week.
Right. Were there crazy people picking you up all the time? Hunter S. Thompson type.
Oh, in Arkansas. I mean, I got picked up by this gay geezer. I mean, before that, I mean, I was so happy to be picked up because I've been standing in this coffee shop for half hour. Don't forget, I had long hair and I had this great coat on. And I was, you know, I was a hippie.
You suddenly transversed into the southern states.
Yeah, and sort of...
Sounds like Easy Rider.
It was terrible. I mean, I was just being sort of... I was invisible. No one was serving me. No one, I mean, I was asking for coffee and no one was serving me. I thought, I better get out. And then I got a lift from this gay geezer, you know, who decided he wanted my services. I said, services, man? I'm not really that way inclined, in strong terms, basically. Next thing, he's dropped me off on the freeway. Now, you're not allowed to hitchhike on a freeway. And it's not as if I can just walk off it, because it's steep banks. So here's me, long air flowing sort of thing, great coat, and I'm trying to get a lift off this thing, Midwest there. I'm thinking, oh, man. All of a sudden, zoop, 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 Arkansas State Patrol pulls up, and they said, what are you doing, boy? And I was...
Good accent, Rick.
I told you, I'm trying to get off, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get off. And he says, you got 5 minutes. I said, well, can't you give me a lift to the exit? I'm not American or anything. I mean, I don't know the rules, you know.
Yeah.
No, you got 5 minutes to get off. I said, what am I going to do?
And you say, I'm going to fight for your country, mate.
Nah, well, I ain't going to mention that. So, I mean, it was less than 5 minutes. Here's me yomping up the road because I've got this pack on my back and I'm running. So the pack's going up, I'm going up, my hair's flowing and so on. All of a sudden, they come by. As soon as I hear that, I've jumped over the bank, and I'm starting skidding down the bank sort of thing. And all of a sudden, this car pulls, bang, halt. And I dig my heels in. I look back, and they've already unbuckled their bloody guns, haven't they? Bastards. So I have to crawl all the way up there to them. They throw me in the back of the law, you know, this car, and sort of chuck me in the neck. And then three of them come in and beat the shit out of me. You know? And I'm thinking, this is the start to the journey.
You should have gone to Vietnam, mate. It would have been a lot easier. Let's just go back a bit. Before you hitched across to Florida to get away from the job, you were in California in 68, 69. So were you caught up in all the hippie? Were you a hippie? Were you caught up in all the hippie culture?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. I mean, that was the whole thing. I mean, where I lived, it was just a walk down to the beach, you know, so long hair. I wasn't a daytime surfer, you know. Yeah. I wasn't, I mean, you know I'm not built that way anyway. Thin-framed, you know, basically.
Wiry surfer.
But, I mean, I liked the evenings down the beach, getting stones out of your head sort of thing, just sitting on the beach, wandering down there. I mean, there was all these malls. I mean, you know, it was empty. You used to go in there and they used to be playing this music. You know, and it'd be all lit up like Christmas trees. And you used to wander in there and sit down there sort of and think, where am I? You know. And then wander off down the beach and sit in the sand thinking, this is what it's all about.
And so did you get to High Ashbury and places like that?
Yeah, I mean, I was up there. I mean, last time I was in up there, it was just around Altamont.
Around
that time. I'd got to Frisco, I'd hitchhiked up there, and I got a lift on the back of this Hell's Angel.
Hell's Angel on the way to Altamont to murder someone, you mean?
I don't know. It didn't seem that way at the time. He was a nice bloke. He gave me a lift, you know what I mean?
You seem to have one of those no sense of danger, sort of.
No, there wasn't any sense of danger. Yeah. It didn't seem that
way. So were you going to Altamont? The festival?
No, I was just going to Frisco. I wanted to go across to Sausalito.
So there was that brief sort of time between Woodstock and Altamont when the dream died?
Yeah, it was only a couple of months. It was only a few months. It was August Woodstock, and I was over in Florida then, around that time. And it was December, was Altamont. And I'd got back to California by then, and I'd gone up there to say goodbye at Frisco, basically. Mm. And so, I mean, as I came back, hitchhiked back, I was picked up by people that had been to Altamont. And they told me the story of Altamont, and most of them didn't know what had gone on there. Because it's on a bank, it goes down. I mean, these people have been stoned out of their box, and they've been sleeping at the top.
Yeah.
And they'd woken up in the morning to people coming, thousands of people walking over them and going down to the front. So they couldn't really see these violent actions going on with the angels down the front
there. And the other adventure you seem to have had, you were instead of hitchhiking, you were actually driving a car across the Mojave Desert.
You picked up
some interesting people.
Yeah. I used to do a 10-year photographic scheme. Never made any money out of it. I used to have to go down and sort of convince people that what we'd do. We'd provide them with a camera. And all the film and everything, all they had to do was pay for 10 years to get their film developed. Fortune. You know, I give the spill, but I had to go out to Lancaster in the Mojave Desert I mean, and I wasn't a good salesman, so they gave me all the phony leads, you know, so I had to go out this to the desert. So on the way back from there, these two geezers, a woman and a geezer hitchhiking. She was Susan Sue, and his name was Barry, I think it was. And I gave him a lift into Los Angeles, and they was chatting in the back about Charlie, you know, and how good Charlie was. And so, and I thought, Charlie, you know, Charlie. And then they were talking about the family. And I thought, the family? You know, I thought, Charlie, the family. You know, how do I link those up? Now, there's a lot of weird groups in that desert at the time, so it could have been any family, you know, but I'm pretty sure.
When they invited you back to the ranch, did you?
No. Basically, they wouldn't invite me back, but it was fascinating. And
when you dropped them off in Los Angeles, wasn't anywhere near Sharon Tate's house, was it?
No, I don't know where she lived. You realise
the statute of limitations ain't out on this.
She was Beverly Hills way. No, I dropped them off in town. She was in Beverly Hills at Sharon Tate.
And they sat behind you the whole way, yeah?
They actually did. No one sat next to me. And that's what I couldn't understand, you know. Saw these eyes glaring in the back of my neck.
Knife sharp.
But no, that was great. The only thing was that they did smell of rubbish. You know, it really did. It was
you're very brave picking on the Manson family now, saying they smelt of rubbish.
Well, I think I might be. No, that was okay. I mean, it didn't make a difference, but they did. You know,
in terms of the Vietnam War, did you not think of hightailing it over the border into Canada like lots of people?
No, it wasn't a lot of point. In Canada, I'd have had. I mean, at least over here. I mean, I'm a British citizen in Canada. Yeah. I'd still be, you know. On a British passport.
So. And besides a bit of sort of the countercultural scene, hippie stuff, you know, were you part of the anti-Vietnam War feeling? And
I mean, in sort of California, yeah. I mean, I met up with a lot of anti-vets, you know, the ones that had been to Vietnam.
Yeah.
There was one, I used to go to Redondo Beach a lot, and I used to have friends, Tom Walsh and a few others. And there was one thing in particular, this you know, it's you had a swimming pool and everything in the idea of the apartments. That's the way the blocks were. And there was one corner apartment. There was this vet, and no one ever saw him. He never came out of his room. He had a girlfriend called Waldo, and little Waldo, she used to get everything, and he just wouldn't come out of his room, and he was there for months. You know, he just never left the place. Mm. He was just totally freaked, you know, and there was other Vietnam vets there as well, and sometimes you used to get heavy because they said, you ain't going, are you, man?
Mm.
You ain't going. I'm not going. I don't want to go.
So let's rejoin your journey. I think you're in Arkansas or Arkansas.
Arkansas.
So eventually you got to Florida, is that right?
Yeah, they let me out the next day and they told me not to come back in the town. And I think it was Little Rock anyway.
Oh, gosh, you can pick them.
Yeah, but eventually I got to Florida. And in Florida it was one of those college breaks going on. So I just got so stoned. My idea was to sort of work a ship home, you know.
Work a ship back from Florida to England.
Come in, cost me nothing, and so I'd get some experience. Jack Kerouac going on the road, I thought, you know. Oh. But, I mean, as I say, there was too many chemicals, and it was too tempting. I mean, I was just tripped out most of the time there. I mean, sort of, and there was this free festival. You know,
you can find them out the Montwoodstock, and now the Florida Free Festival.
Oh, this is before the old one.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. There was a Florida one. It was going to be called Winter's End, you know.
Winter's End.
Yeah, it was going to be called the Winter's End, and basically, what happened was they said this site. It was up on the coast, Florida coast. So we're all tripped out, and we're all tripping up the coast. We're all going up. As soon as we get to a site, the law has said it's illegal. So then there's another site being prepared. So we're tripping back down. So and then the law said no, that's done. So and then we're tripping back up again.
Eventually tripping, or you mean tripping? Yeah.
Well, tripping and tripping both the time. And so we get to this place, and it's Orlando. It's where they built Disneyland, and it was empty. It was just empty fields. And we all get in, piles, thousands and thousands of us piling in. As soon as we all get in, then the law say it's illegal. So everyone leaving was immediately arrested. No one was leaving, were they?
Yeah.
So the campfires got built. Johnny Winters and Allman Brothers were playing.
And that's why it was called the Winter Festival, because Johnny Winters...
I think it was just the Winter's End.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, it just happened to be Johnny Winters that were playing. You know, I think that was, you know... But there was a group called Hogs Farm. They were sort of notorious communists. They just come in and they cook up all this batch of brown rice. So we was eating brown rice. We had food. And then they started printing a newspaper off. So it became this village. So you had... newspaper, and then sort of you had in the evenings Johnny Winters used to come out with an acoustic. I mean, there was people, just the band used to come out and just play.
Well, the police are still outside all this time.
Still out there waiting to arrest anyone coming out. You know.
Why would you want to leave?
Really, it was amazing. You know, I mean, there's plenty of dope as well, mind you. I mean, it was. I mean, you had to pay for that. I mean, because the dealers ain't going to be sort of communist, are they? Not really, you know, but I mean, that's okay, you know. So, you know, eventually they did say it was okay and we could leave.
So what happened then about your trip back to England then?
Well, I decided I weren't going to get a boat because I was a bit too frayed at the edges, basically. So, so I got a Greyhound bus back.
Back to California?
Back to California.
Well, you were doing the Kerouac trip, weren't you?
Yeah, well, the Greyhound bus was amazing. People you meet on a Greyhound bus.
How many
bus.
Days would that take to get back then?
That's about five, about 4 or 5 days. So, I mean, the Greyhound bus back sort of, sleeping on the bus. But, I mean, I nearly split off. I think it was Arizona. I was sitting next to this young woman, and she was going to go off to the Salvation Army place. She nearly convinced me to join her.
What a laugh that would have been.
I thought, I've got to get back. You know,
so you got back, but you're sort of in the same situation you were before then. You've got to avoid the draft. Yeah. So what did you do then?
Well, next thing, so it was time, a little bit time. But, I mean, there was a chance came up. This boat came in, and it was late in Long Beach. It was SS Australis had arrived, and they were late. So they had to fly the people off to New York. So they had all these cabins, all these berths free on a 19-day cruise over to England, you know, and it was less than $300. So I scraped the money up, didn't I? Oh, of course, wouldn't you?
So this is
so it was a 19-day cruise.
So this cruise was going through the Panama Canal
through
that
the
way.
Panama Canal, up to Nassau, New York, and then basically over. So.
Oh, hardship. My name is Rick Nugent.
It was crazy. I had first prostitute in Cristobal, never had any more after that. I got sold a duff
money
one
left
on
over. Those were the days.
Sold a real duff one on that one. But no, it was.
if you're out there, his name's Rick Nugent. Cristobal, 1969, I think it was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was fun.
So,
time.
Just to, before we talk about your time back in England, so what happened then? Were the FBI after you for draft avoidance,
well,
or did they go to your parents?
Quick,
yeah, go on. What have you got there?
This was sent to my parents' place. Dear Mr. Nugent, the United States Attorney has informed this office that you have been reported delinquent by a local selective service board, number 117, such and such, South Crenshaw Boulevard. You are instructed immediately to communicate with this local board and to comply with any orders received without further delay. The enclosed self-addressed envelope may be used to advise me you have contacted your local board.
Oh, how nice to include a self-addressed envelope.
Capital letters. This matter demands prompt attention. Inasmuch as failure to obey instructions of your local board may subject you to prosecution in the United States District Court. Yours very truly, Wesley G. Grant.
So when you didn't turn up, did they come to your house, your parents?
Yeah, FBI were around, the agents were around, sort of thing. They said, we'd never heard this before. Mum said, sort of basically, you know, he's gone off to further his education.
Nassau in the Bahamas. So what's the situation now then? Are they still after you? Or?
A few years later, after that, I mean, there was a lot, it's not all in context at the moment, but obviously. A few years later, I wanted to get back to see me folks because they'd moved to Las Vegas by then. Yeah. So they'd gone to Vegas. And I went up to get a visa, and they wouldn't allow me a visa. But they called me up to the office, and I'd handed my green card over to show them, and they'd cut my green card up. Once they cut my green card up, then they'd give me the visa so that I couldn't go over there and work.
Right.
Because you used to have to renew the green card every year.
But you couldn't be arrested for a draft dodging.
It seems that way because they'd allowed me in.
Right.
And yet, I've got to tell you, I mean, recently, as a year ago, there's someone coming in, Americans, that had gone into Canada around this time.
Yeah.
And they'd come in, and they'd been coming back and forward all this time, and all of a sudden they tightened up, I suppose you threw the Iraq thing, and they'd arrested them and thrown them in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So every time you get a tap on your shoulder.
Always.
All right, you're back in England. You've got to earn a living, no more of this freewheeling lifestyle of greyhound buses and prostitutes and free dope. And so what did you do when you got back, work-wise?
I miss it.
You can't bring yourself to talk about work, folks.
No, one of the first serious jobs I did, I got on British Rail, basically. I became a freight guard.
Yeah.
Which was a terrific job, really.
It was just riding the rods like hobos out west.
Yeah, it was. It's Jet Kerouac again, isn't it? I mean, seriously, I must have been living a dream, really, you know. But, I mean, I became a freight guard at Bricklayers Arms. And sort of a freight guard is basically you sit in this van at the back and you have a brake, a wheel brake.
Yeah.
So most of these freights were loose coupled. In other words, there was no vacuum pumps.
Right.
So the reason you got your brake, you have to know the gradients if you're going up or down hills.
So you've got a book of gradients?
You have to know exactly where you're going up and coming down because you have to tighten the brake up to keep the train coupled up straight.
I fear disaster lurking.
Well, it didn't really make much difference. Very rarely did it come uncoupled. So, I mean, I was still stoned out of my box sort of thing, falling asleep. Used to collect...
Did you say you had a little fire there or something?
Used to go around... Because it's mainly evening work, you know, Used to go around collect coal, you know, go around take the numbers of all your wagons, making sure they were coupled. Because some of those shunters were in a bad state as I was, basically. That's why a lot of them had lost their arms and legs. Little accidents that happened. I mean, I've seen drivers carried out pissed as rats sort of thing, sort of carried in and just dumped in the diesel.
Yeah.
They got second men, obviously. The second men did the driving, but the drivers, well... So, I mean, it was running like that, but there was never any accidents. It was really strange. The railway, now you get tested. Yeah. But things seem to run. We all work together on this situation. And they seem to run really good, you know.
You get drug tested now, even if you're just pushing a refreshment trolley around.
Exactly. And look how many accidents they get in.
Yeah.
So what's that mean?
Scalding hot tea all over.
No, here's me drinking Benylin and codeine linctus and sort of Benylin and morphine linctus on the train sort of thing, and no accidents.
None you can remember.
Still waving the flag, you know.
You can remember no accidents and exhaustive. So then I think I don't know if it's promotion, is it? You became a passenger guard?
I got fed up with doing the loads.
Was that promotion or was that just the same?
I just applied to London Bridge.
I thought your safety record was so outstanding that you could be trusted with.
I never got done for anything. That was all right.
they can't touch me for it.
That's right.
Statute of limitations.
Seriously, that's right. So, I mean, I've become a passenger guard at London Bridge. I mean, we all used to work cooperation. I mean, I'll tell you one story. We was coming up empty from Brighton to London.
Empty
of passengers. It was just the train was empty. I was in the brake van. And we have a word. You see, instead of going to the side as a New Cross Gate, I have a word with the driver. The driver says he's slowed down. You get off the train at the platform. It saves you time walking back from the sidings, over the platform, back to London Bridge, home.
But he don't stop. He just slows down.
You know. So he was slowing down. You know, I mean, I thought. So we get to New Cross Gate, and he's not really slowing down. So I'm hanging out of the wagon, and you have this big bag. You've got detonators and everything in it. I'm carrying detonators, you know, flags, detonators and everything. All your books, timetables.
Gradients.
Yeah, everything. I'm hanging out things thinking, he's going to slow down any minute now, you know. And basically, the bag's got stuck on the rack. So I'm trying to free the bag, you know. I'm trying to free the bag, and he ain't slowing down. You know, anyway, all of a sudden the bag goes loose. What happens? Here's me flying through the air on a platform. All the passengers on the side there. And I'm literally off the ground. And so I'm just flying. And you know, basically, all of a sudden, I dig in. I've got these boots with sort of steel bits of the back. And I've dug in sparks. And I'm travelling down a platform. You know, sort of. And these passengers are watching me go by. The train's going by. And I'm travelling by the train. And so the passengers are watching. And all of a sudden, I go flipping over. So I'm ripping my jeans and sort of my boots and everything, and I just get up and run over the other platform and get the train back to London Bridge. That was it.
Did you make it to closing time for a drink?
Oh yeah, I got back in time for a drink. Always got back in time for a drink.
And were you you were in the union then? Was it been national?
Yeah,
I was
a local district representative at London Bridge. Sorry. Yeah, I was worked in the union there for a while. I mean, we had some, you know, the point about the union sort of basically is they want you to do something. And you go up there and you do it. And then they say, no, we ain't going to lose our overtime. So it makes you look like some kind of cunt, basically, you know. Excuse me. But it does.
Yeah.
And sort of, so it just, but I had some great trips. I mean, I went up to Ayr on conference.
Yeah.
And they nearly arrested me in Carlisle.
What, they refused to let you into Scotland?
Tell us
why you got arrested in Carlisle.
Well, we all went up on the train and all the beer got loaded on the train, so we're well pissed by the time we get to Carlisle. So we decided we'd jump off at Carlisle and we have a few drinks in the pub.
Carlisle, they still had state-run breweries.
Before we go to where, yeah. But, I mean, went in the pub in Carlisle, and basically what happened, you know, I'm in there, we're all in there, and there's no one else. The pub's a long pub, you know, and it's just us guards sort of, you know, debating and shouting and arguing.
Discussing union business, no doubt.
Swearing our heads off, you know, basically. And the governor's come over and said, none of that in here, please. You know, basically. None of what? None of what? Well, no, you know, you can't say that. You can't say that. I said, why? He says, there's a woman. I look over, miles away, there's a woman over there. No, he couldn't hear what was going. Can't say that. You can't say that. So anyway, I think I might have been well worse to wear for weather compared to the other ones. So they've said, it's all right, no, Rick, you know, so, you know, can't do that. You can't stop me swearing in a pub. It's an institution. We're all allowed to swear in pubs, you know, basically. So next thing, two of my mates have dragged me out and we've laid over, sort of put me over the thing. And a cop car's come rising up, sort of, and they all jumped out and gone rushing.
And it was the same cop who nicked you in Arkansas 25 years earlier.
Looked like it. Same fascist. That's for sure.
We got 2 minutes left. I know pubs have played... a big role in your life, but give us 2 minutes on the virtues of the English pub and why it's such a great community space.
It was a true anarchist thing, basically, because you could always find someone to do a job for you in a pub.
Yeah.
You didn't have any go-betweens. You know, you always find someone and you'd be able to do a job for someone else. And the
so
whole
like
thing.
A labour market.
Yeah, it was. And then what they'd done, it gentrified that, closed down the ones that you used to be able to get numbers in.
Yeah.
And there's no, I mean, people don't talk. I mean, most of the people that, you know, working class, they can't afford these gentrified places.
Yeah.
You know, £3.50 a pint, things like that. I mean, who can afford that on certain wages or certain dole money or certain whatever? So, therefore, people aren't communicating anymore. You know, it needs something else to happen. I mean, I think it's disgraceful the way they're closing them down. You know,
all the little local boozers seem to be being closed down.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think your favourite pub ever, as I hear, was the Wickwood Tavern, was it? Give us a minute's eulogy to the Wickwood.
Well, the Wickwood was just a collection of everybody, every type of person you could think of going in and talking. And they would debate. I mean, an amount of arguments I didn't know. I used to spend 12 hours in that pub at the time. You know, sometimes
was this during work or after it?
Both. Well, I might have been at work at one time, but I wasn't.
Could you jump off the train right outside the Wickwood?
Exactly, near enough. It was Denmark Hill. You used to get down, hit the Sun and Doves, hit the Sun and Doves first, and then get into Wickwood. There's always somewhere to get a drink there, sort of, you know, later on. In guard's uniform. You know, people used to wonder what. I mean, there was always parties going on afterwards. So, I mean, if I hit there, I'd always go back to a party. So it was me wandering around party when everyone's out of it in a guard's uniform. And they obviously thought it was a bit weird, really, but I mean. No one said much.
Yeah. Well, pubs have a sort of time, don't they, when they're just really brilliant. And
it was. I mean, it's a shame they closed that one down because it was. I mean, you know, Jane, your other half, used it, and she knows it was brilliant as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it's a shame all over South London, little boozers being closed down. I mean, we really should do more to defend those pubs.
Yeah, that's why I like the Whitechapel group when they did that pub crawl. I think there should be more of that going on. Seriously, just... To learn where these pubs are so you can build them up and sort of at least put some money in their coffers, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I believe.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need, you know, anarchist social centres. There's community centres out there already which are called pubs. Okay, Rick, that was actually brilliant. There's about another two-thirds of your life left reserved for another programme. There's definitely a book in there somewhere. That's all from Anarchism UK for this week. Next week I've got Chris Knight on the show, so look forward to seeing you all then. Cheers.